This episode of Watch Out for Fireballs is brought to you by our patrons. Patrons at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Thank you all. We appreciate you so much.
So much.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Crysis, which is a first-person shooter developed by Crytek and published by Electronic Arts for the PC in 2007.
Yeah. This is our premium episode for this month. So patrons will hear the entire thing. Everyone else will be able to hear the generalities. If you'd like to hear the rest of it, you go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Mm-hmm. This is a Gary pick. I'd like to tell you why I picked it now that I've played it. I'm like, so here's my thinking.
Okay.
There's different reasons we might do a vanity pick. Mm-hmm. Right? One would be like, this is a game I've always wanted to talk about.
Yes.
You know, this is, it might be because it's something we're in the mood for. Mm-hmm. I was experimenting in my head with like, this is something I've always wanted an excuse to play because I've heard about it, but I know almost nothing about it.
Right.
You know, a good example of something like that is like at some point I might fuck everything up and bring Fable 2 mm-hmm. to the table. Like I've never played that game. It's just a weird blind spot. Like yeah. it's a, you know, same thing with this. This is just something I'd heard about. And the only thing I'd heard about this was the tech stuff. So my thinking was, oh, there's a game under there. I've never heard anyone talk about it. Oops. Maybe that game is kind of interesting. Turns out it's not. Turns out it's like a solid B for most of it and then takes a huge dump. And then I was reading about the rest of the series and it goes absolutely dumb nuts after this. Uh-huh. And it's just a big nothing. And I had no idea. Well, fuck me, I guess. I just live and learn, you know?
Yeah. Like, this is, I appreciate the instinct. Another reason we might, pick, and I know that this, you know, factored in, mm-hmm. is, you know, to maybe shore up, make up or something in the schedule. We've been in a real indie heavy mood.
100%.
Yeah. And so doing a big dumb action thing, that's a big name that is kind of associated with like, this is a prestige first person shooter from, you know, it's a kind of emblematic of an era of first person shooters and also the end of an era of first person shooters, you know, bigger, mm-hmm. bigger kind of game, you know, and yeah. I kind of was of the same opinion that there might have been something cool here. Gary, what we got is a classic game for which I feel nothing.
It's pretty hard to feel very strongly about this.
Yeah.
I will say, I do like the first like 2/3 of it quite a bit.
Yes.
It's fun. It's just fun. It's like a solid B. It's like a slightly less good Singularity.
Yeah.
And then it takes the huge dump at the end. Mm-hmm. Like it goes dump crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it Gatlin dumps all over my play experience. And up until, you know, so if it were held that B, it would mm-hmm. still be hard to feel too much about Crysis.
Right.
But I at least wouldn't have this like bad taste in my mouth mm-hmm. at the end. You know, the most memorable things to me about this are not its best things, which kind of sucks. So nice little reminder that like vanity picks and games we do on the show in general, not necessarily endorsements.
Yeah.
Like we're not looking necessarily for the best of a version of something. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying that a little bit to head off. Oh man, but Crysis 3 is the one you should play. That one fixes all the problems. Like,
yeah.
I don't care. I think I've done what I can do to give this franchise a look, and not for me.
Right. You know, and I can say for anybody who says, oh, dude, you should have, like Crysis 2 and 3 are very different than this.
Yes.
As well. I've played a good portion of Crysis 2. It's neat. You know, I don't know that it necessarily in 2023 is like the game from that era that I would throw back to. Right.
Yeah. They're different like levels of, so this is still interesting as a historical artifact.
Yes.
Because it is such a throwback, in playing in 2023, like something that was at the absolute cutting edge is full of very out of fashion decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of which are actually pretty interesting and refreshing.
Yes.
In this. And that stuff is all, but kind of consider this a poster for like this era.
Yes. Yeah. And also there's like nascent stuff in this, like, you know, I can't think of a game before this first person shooter or stealth action game otherwise that had the mark and kill system. Right.
Yeah.
You know, where you're doing recon and just placing markers and stuff, like they're the beginnings of like single player. Yeah. Base so. Dismantlement kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You do that kind of stuff. This with like Far Cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is something we haven't, a series we haven't touched
either. Right.
Yeah. You know, so in this you play as Nomad. You are a special forces soldier and you've been dispatched with a squad to rescue some archaeologists from an island held by the North Korean army.
Right. And this takes place in the far off year of 2020. And there is this sci-fi element about as
Biden
well.
Squad dispatched to North Korea.
Every single
Listen
member
in the B unit.
Every single member of the Biden squad is named Jack.
Jack Jester, Jack Nomad, Jack Jericho.
Come on, Jack. Yeah. And then just, and who's that? Oh man, opens up the nano suit helmet. It's Corn Pop.
It's Corn Pop. We dropped a tactical Corn Pop drone strike onto North Korea. The the 2020, the Biden squad. But it's sci-fi. You are in super suits. They're called nano suits.
Mm-hmm.
And also they're aliens. That's a bit of a reveal.
Yeah.
That they're aliens. But this is a space marine versus alien game, basically at its core.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yep. So from a play perspective, this plays, it's very much a post Halo first person shooter. You know, you can only carry a limited number of weapons. You've got 2 assault weapons, a pistol, and 2 explosives. You're going to be doing swapping based on tactical scenario kind of things. There's a stealth element to this as well. We'll talk about that when we talk about, like, you know, AI and kind of level design, because that is kind of, you know, built into it. Additionally, your health and your suit energy both recharge. Yes. A la Halo. You just have to go long enough without taking damage or without moving.
And your suit energy also functions as a shield.
Yes.
You lose suit energy before you lose regular energy. They're decent shields and they recharge quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, in terms of stuff of this era that it avoids, mm-hmm. you're not going to spend a lot of time hiding behind a corner waiting to catch your breath.
Right.
You know, it happens pretty fast mm-hmm. in this. This is in the very small subgenre of games I have a big weakness for, which is an FPS with superpowers.
Right.
Like your Project Snowblinds or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Your nanosuit has different modes it can go into. Sprinting and jumping very high are also modes in this. Maximum speed, maximum strength. Armor mode is your default. So that's the thing that allows your energy to become a shield.
You got to activate it though. Default is just you walking around as a dude.
It doesn't take any energy to be in armor mode.
Oh yes.
So you want to be in armor mode basically all the time.
Yeah. You move more slowly if that is the case. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you were, in armor mode before you switch to stealth or whatever, when you run out of, stealth power, mm-hmm. it will default back to armor mode. For you, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of marquee one here is the stealth mode, which is a very limited cloak.
Yes.
Yeah.
Makes you invisible, out to a certain distance. You're not inaudible. you know, and firing a weapon while you are, while stealth is still up, is a pretty bad idea because we'll automatically drain all of your energy and make you visible.
Yes. And this is kind of the marquee power for the suit, you know, so to speak. It informed how I played the good part of the game, you know, the first two thirds of it, having a very, very short cloak to move between bits of cover to confuse enemies. And it lends itself into, you know, the first part of this game, which is a guerrilla war simulator.
Yeah.
And is really fun.
Yeah.
The, you can, when things get heavy though, you switch between these instantly. Mm-hmm. So it's on the PC, it's just middle mouse button. I played the original version of this because I wanted to not do the remastered. I wanted to see how it looked.
Oh,
everything. And it's it switches really seamlessly.
Yeah. So I did the remaster. So that I think might account for some of the differences. I didn't know that the original one was still available. Was the thing. So
I looked it up. I was like, can you still play the original Crysis? Because again, since this was such a tech, you know, thing, I wanted to see, like, does this still look good?
Right.
You know, nowadays with its original stuff. And yeah.
Yeah,
it does. It
looks good. On the remaster, it's just on the keyboard, it's Q and E. So it's like it's right there. Q will put you in shield mode and E puts you in and stealth. And it is super important that you're able to do this with no cooldown, really. Like there's no penalty, you know, for switching. So like even trying to save your suit energy on a stealth, like, okay, I'm gonna turn it on to get across an open space, and now I'm kind of inside this building where I know that, you know, people aren't gonna be around. I can, you know, take it off for just a second. Oh man, this one guy saw me. I'm gonna armor up, you know, try and use a silenced weapon, take him out, you know, if that goes bad, then I can speed mode out. Like, all, you know, being able to switch all of this on the fly is pretty important for adapting to situations.
Yes. Yeah. It cannot be stressed enough how limited your energy is.
Right.
In this. All of these things will go really quick. When you're in sprint mode, you sprint a very short distance before you run out of energy. Invisibility doesn't last very long. You can get do two jumps in maximum strength mode, you know, or a couple very strong punches, things like that. Like, you, this is all about choosing the moment where they will have the most impact and then deploying them, knowing that it's in very, very limited resource.
Yeah.
Renewable, but very limited in terms of like it's RAM, you know, so to speak. So and switching between them makes that work, like makes it being able to switch between them very quickly. You deploy them as needed.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a question for you. How's the jump feel in the original? Because at least as I was playing it, it's one of the most dog shit jumps in first person shooters. It's all vertical and no horizontal.
The when I was in maximum strength, trying to like scale a mountain, the jump sucked. Like, you need to get a little bit of a run to get any forward momentum. The regular jump was fine.
Okay.
To me, it is a thing where you have to get a little momentum to move forward with a jump. It does not feel like a normal video game where you have like Mario control and you can do a standing jump and then just kind of will yourself forward.
Yeah. I think that the again, this being of its time, there being no mantling means that there are a lot of situations where it's like, all right, I've got a super jump. I'm going to try and get up to this balcony on the, you know, up here.
Yeah.
I do whoosh, and just jump straight up and then like all the way back down.
So you had to get a running jump or like spending a lot of time trying to Skyrim up some mountains.
Yep.
You know, to get into a thing. And that's immensely silly.
Yeah. Like,
kind of fun that you can do it, but it's dumb and of its time.
Yeah.
You know? You're fragile in this. You are a super soldier. You are God's gift to guns. and you go down real quick in this. That's why, you know, again, a guerrilla warfare simulator, like even when you put on your shield, which is good, like will protect you from some hits and you will regen. You can't just stand and fire, and almost immediately the enemy starts bringing like gunboats and stuff, like overwhelming fire against you, like mounted machine guns, which will chew you up. So you really have to use cover and be real sneaky for this.
Yeah. The zero time to kill, for enemies on you. And the time to kill on enemies is generally fine. You know, like shooting somebody matters, and you get feedback that goes out the window with a bunch of other stuff when you start fighting the alien squid things.
It also even the last humans you fight also do this thing. This is a nitpick, but I'm going to throw it in here because it's a thing the game gets right for a long time. Mm-hmm. Something I wish I could erase from shooters is shooters should always have feedback when the enemy's actually dead.
Yes.
Half-Life figured it out. You mm-hmm. get that flat line sound. It's beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. In this, early on, if an enemy fell down, they were dead. And I was like, that's great. Like, yep. You could, if you wanted to show that they're injured, have them stumble about. Eventually, they just start getting up.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why we accept that as a standard in FPSs.
No.
Because it makes it so you have to, like, you shoot somebody, they're down on the ground. You had to kind of like, are you dead? Mm-hmm. Can I turn my back on you? Like, it just kills the pace of play. If you turn to face another threat, you're just going to get shot in the back.
Yeah.
It's not that interesting. You just need to take cover and watch a guy roil around and see if he's going to do his death animation or his stand-up animation.
Mm-hmm.
Or just waste some ammo in his body. But even then, if he's in his death animation, the bullets don't do anything. You know, right. Then he stops reacting. He's locked in that animation. It just bums me out. And I was really happy about this game early on because I was like, man, my weapons seem lethal.
Uh-huh.
Like this, the whole idea of this is we're both incredibly lethal. Mm-hmm. Which is always what I prefer than yes. like we're both incredibly tanky. You know, and I was like, oh, this they fixed it. And then they mm-hmm. didn't. They unfixed it.
Yeah.
And then they really unfixed it with the Cephs. The God, fucking Cephs, dude. Fucking
Cephs, dude.
God, I hate Cephs. As a soldier, don't get me started on Cephs.
These Cephs guys are a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cephs got to go. The Alpha Ceph.
Yeah, it's a real bummer when that happens in any shooter. It's like, yes, okay. It's a trade-off. Am I going to waste ammo or am I going to waste health? And yep. the answer is time. why are you forcing me to waste anything? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I all three of these things are not that interesting to just spend
yeah.
in this way. Like just make enemies' heads explode when they're dead or something. You know? Yeah. I don't know.
As loud as possible. It doesn't have to be blood. Make it confetti. Yeah. Make it clown parts.
I don't give a shit. You know, yeah. that flatline sound effect from Half-Life 2 is so genius.
Uh-huh.
It's like very satisfying. It's Pavlovian. Like,
yeah. Now I'm sure they weren't the progenitor of this, but I'm just going to blame Bioshock Infinite. I curse you for making all enemies in FPSs those prank birthday cake candles that keep lighting back up.
Blow out.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. If you're an average citizen of a white supremacist sky state, you can take a few clips of shotgun and basically walk it off.
This game got a good shotgun.
Power of hatred. Yeah. The shotgun's great in this. Yeah. The weapons in general, pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
There are upgrades for your weapons. So like silencers, scopes, things like that you can find in the environment. This is something that I think is worth noting. It's of its timeness. This is a weird empty game.
Mm-hmm.
Environments are huge. Like levels are really large and open, but this is almost entirely to give you avenues of approach,
yeah.
not to hide things.
Right.
You are not a Roomba in this. You do not want to be scavenging. You're going to get your ammo from enemies and most of your weapons from enemies. Every once in a while, you'll find a cache.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're spending all this time digging through every like village hut,
yeah.
you're mostly just finding destructible objects and chickens you can toss. One of my favorite little bits of this, you can pick up every animal.
Uh-huh.
The very first thing you do is pick up a turtle.
Come here, little fuck.
Yeah. this turtle's been rude to me my whole life. You know, and that's why I returned him to the ocean. But you're not really, and in a more modern game, this would be collectibles or worse, like crafting shit.
Yeah.
You'd be gruffling around here. It was very, very refreshing to me to be in a bunch of lived in spaces that didn't have anything other than the walls that they were made of, you know, tactically. It's not something I'd want from all video games. Like I like being able to find shit, but it just felt so out of step with modern games, you know?
Yeah. Like it feels weird to play a game that is focused. Like this is a shooter. These spaces are designed for shooting.
Yep.
You know,
you need to know which walls are destructible or not, you know, which corners they're going to hide a trinket in or right. like an intel that you then get scored and get honor points at the end or something like that. Like, they just don't do that. Like, any of the intel you're getting is part of the plot.
Right.
You know, and boy, you upload some files.
Oh man. You mentioned destructibility there mm-hmm. as well. It took me a little while to not get bummed out when a building that I hadn't explored was destroyed. There probably wasn't anything that important in there, you know?
There probably wasn't anything in there. Yeah. Like 9 out of 10 buildings don't have an object you can interact with other yeah. than like pick up and toss for no reason.
Yeah. But these, you know, these buildings, this is an island in the Pacific. There hasn't been a lot of like upkeep and stuff. It's all made of like corrugated metal, held yeah. together with twine. Everything falls over. They have a light breeze hits it.
It can be very fun if you are taking cover from overwhelming fire uh-huh. and the building starts coming out down around you.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
I had a couple like just absolutely, you know, A+ gamer moments of like running for cover and then having the cover collapse.
Yeah.
Before I could get to it, mm-hmm. which is really fun and dramatic.
Yeah.
You know, that's awesome. I know this is not the first game to do that or mm-hmm. anything, but it's real cool. Yeah. It's a good execution of that.
Yeah. The weapon upgrades are fun because they don't stop you from doing stupid shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I really don't need a scope on this shotgun, but I put it on there anyway.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Very silly.
Yeah.
These big levels that aren't full of collectibles, the reason the purpose they fulfill is different avenues of approach. So when you come upon an encampment or a goal, you need to scope this out and figure out what angle you want to attack it from. Very similar to Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah.
Like not nearly as good, you know, but again, also like 10 years beforehand.
Right. Yeah. And it's fun. You know, like, and there's a good amount of variety in this. Like some of the bases have, you know, sewers underneath mm-hmm. where you can swim up under. There are like all kinds of vehicles in this. So you can decide if you want to go loud or quiet. If you would like to go by sea, you know, there's mm-hmm. often, you know, boats, you know, boats around, things like that. Like, yeah, there's an awful lot of information available to you lots of different ways to act on it. When it lets you do that stuff, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. Like sincerely very, very good. It's fun to have a base bounce off it because it's a hardened base and then be like, oh, this is on a river. Mm-hmm. I saw a gunboat upriver. Let's go jump in that gunboat and do strafing runs to soften this up.
Yeah.
Like enemies can call on reinforcements, but if you take out their reinforcement callers, they can't. Right. And you can also blow up their infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Like taking a gunboat, blowing up all of the gun encampments and gun mounted vehicle mounted guns mm-hmm. and everything before that happens is really satisfying.
Yeah.
Very, very fun. The enemy AI in this is real good. Mm-hmm. They do squad tactics. They hunt you down. If you go stealth, they kind of do like area searches, mm-hmm. you know, so if you go stealth behind a thing, they will find you. You'll see them on your little mini map mm-hmm. sneaking up on you. Also, I don't know where else to put this. I think this is a really brilliant touch. One of the toggleable difficulty things is whether the enemies speak English.
Yes, that is super neat.
God, what a genius difficulty thing. So like if they're speaking English, you can understand them. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, he's over here, stuff like that. But you can set it so they speak Korean. If you speak Korean, you're fine. If not, though, it just, you don't know what they're yelling.
Yeah.
Putting that in the difficulty menu, I think is legitimately like maybe quietly the coolest thing this game does.
It's pretty cool.
You know, that's a great idea. Super, super great idea.
Yeah.
When you're fighting North Koreans, this game is awesome.
Yes.
It's so good. And it's fun for that whole time. And I was like, man, this is really legit. We got a singularity on our hands. We don't.
No.
No. Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, gosh.
World's biggest singularity fan over here. At a certain point, aliens show up and every cool thing we've talked about disappears.
Yeah. Just and that, evaporates.
That point is about like 2/3 of the way through the game. Like
it's mission 7 that yeah. that is the you go into the core of the mountain and do the floating around stuff, and then it just becomes fighting enemies with no AI, with too much HP. They give no feedback if you're hitting them.
Yeah,
yeah.
They fucking suck. And it's that floating around level is okay. It's kind of interesting. Like it goes on for a long time.
Yeah.
Again, in a weird way that like doesn't feel modern. You know, like, oh, this is a 3D like descent level maze that feels like an alien space. Like I think this is kind of admirable. When you get out though, like, fuck me, it just immediately starts doing all of the worst things that games can do. It like begins with it's a bullet sponge enemies, an escort mission, and then like a series of scripted shitty vehicle things with other control systems, and then just like a really, really by the numbers awful boss fight.
Yep.
And it's over. Like, it also ends really quick at that point. And it ends on a cliffhanger. Like,
yeah,
it's so weird. There's no one talks about this game. I didn't pick up any of this shit through osmosis.
Nope.
And that's why.
Yeah. The only thing that I remember hearing anybody say about the game itself, I do remember there being a disparity between the quality of fighting the aliens and fighting the human soldiers.
Yeah.
Like everything else. I don't remember like which people said was better. The game press industry was really bad back then. I hope it wasn't so bad that it was like, oh yeah, these aliens fucking rule.
Yeah.
imagine it.
The most fun part about the aliens to me is that they use ice powers.
Yes.
Which made the name not just, I was like, oh, okay, that's why it's called this.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, oh, this is interesting. Like, I like an icy landscape. The idea of when the aliens show up, and this is a spoiler, but who gives a shit? You weren't going to play this.
It's the dumbest story possible. I don't respect it enough to not spoil it.
No, it's ridiculous. And then it gets worse. Like reading the synopsises and stuff of, one, you know, two and three, your main character dies off screen.
Yep.
In between games.
Nomad doesn't matter.
Yeah, Nomad doesn't matter. He doesn't make it out. So the idea of going through these levels again, but having them changed, almost like Ilium Lois, you know, like here's the level frozen over and how that changes things. I think that's real neat. Yeah. It's just, I should have been fighting like ice Koreans. I don't know. I wish I don't know what, just something other than these big floating garbage aliens.
Koreans.
There we go. Yeah. Far up North Korean.
Yeah.
You know, North Pole Koreans. I anything other than these fucking aliens, none of them are fun to fight.
Nope.
Not a single goddamn one.
They fly around. They will just arbitrarily take cover. You know, and it's like, oh, I'm gone. No, I'm here. Peekaboo. Do a little pop, I'm going to find you.
Yeah, it's very Centipede. And then, they're very, very hard to keep straight.
Yeah.
They suck.
Yeah. Oh, it's a problem.
Yeah. It's a huge sour note for this to end on.
Yeah.
There was multiplayer for this when it came out. I did not engage with that, but it sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
32 players per match. They had a lot of vehicles. These really huge maps. Like, I can imagine this being really fun if you got a well-coordinated squad.
It was powered by GameSpy. Do you remember GameSpy?
I love the GameSpy. That logo pops up in my head. Lives rent-free.
It's a really good logo. And yeah, it was a good service.
Yeah, a little GameSpy.
And they also shipped their editing tools. They shipped like a sandbox level editor, which was a huge deal at the time. Like, you know, SDK tools have been out basically, you know, since first person shooters existed and even before, but like this one was, you know, had an interface very similar to just playing the game. You could like drop in and, you know, try stuff out as you went around. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know that it had enough, you know, cool parts to make anything especially cooler than what you find in the base game, but it's a neat concept that they open that up.
Yeah. I admirable. Yeah. And also out of fashion.
Yes.
You know, like technology has gotten to the point now where that's more prohibitive to do.
Last time I remember a big game doing that, it was like Doom 2016.
Yeah. Yeah. And even then that was very compromised with its like Lego set.
Yeah.
Like Doom fans, like, you know, hardcore waters were extremely upset about that.
Yeah.
Because it's a weird Lego block construction as opposed to the very freeing original version of that. Worth talking about the aesthetics, because this was the hallmark of this game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a huge technological triumph in this. Similar to, you got in the notes, oops, all Carmack's, John Carmack. This is made by like living computer people who know how to push things to their absolute ridiculous limit.
Yeah.
Of this.
To what end?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a, you know, a treatise on graphics.
Yes. In
a way, right.
Yeah.
So, like, next time somebody is talking about how impressive something looks, as if that is going to make it last, point to Crysis.
Yeah.
You know, all this shit is transient. What is the Ghost of Tsushima?
Yes.
You know, like that, by most accounts, was a pretty generic game, but people were very impressed by the visuals. Mm-hmm. That will not last. That is going to fade. I'm not saying it, you can't get any candy value from it now.
Uh-huh.
You know, but as a medium, as an art form, it makes it like somewhat troubling to talk about because it's something that inherently has a time limit.
Yeah.
You know?
The best you can ever hope to be is very good for your time.
Yes. Yeah. And this is. You know, I could imagine playing this at the time it came out and having my mind pretty blown.
Oh, yeah.
The same me that in 1997 had my friends watch Final Fantasy VII Summons.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just as like a movie, like, check this shit out.
Uh-huh.
You know, Ifrit, motherfucker. And then would show them this animation and then be like, this is the coolest thing ever, right? Would probably show this off if I had played it.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, yeah, but there's no... All this stuff is fleeting. This is sand. You know, this is trying to grab a handful of water. Like this, you know, it cannot be.
Yeah. And you know? So like, and has this big feeling of making a big demo of stuff. Other, it feels like a sales piece for yes. getting people to license this engine, which is what this kind of was, right? Like they do license the Crytek engine out. Like it is a thing that games can be built on. But like, if you look up anything about it, it's like, oh, do you want volumetric light? Well, this will take advantage of that. Do you want fog? Yeah. Things like that.
Well, it's a demo, but then also the guy, when you read interviews with the guy, like he's a believer in this property. Like,
yeah.
This is made with care and love in a weird way, even if I do ultimately think it's a little bit misguided, mm-hmm. right? Like there are true believers behind this. It's not cynical,
uh-huh.
you know, saying something's a tech demo. I know this wasn't your intent, but it can come off like it's cynical. Like it's only a tech demo.
Right.
This yeah. was meant to do that and push those limits. It was also meant to blow some people away and be an honest expression of like, let's make a really good, competent, fun shooter.
Yeah.
In the style of the time.
Yeah. And everything has to be a trade-off, right?
Yes.
You know, I think about this in terms of, you know, I use this comparison a lot, but I believe it's very illustrative. 2004, two big MMOs came out. Okay.
Yeah.
You had World of Warcraft and you had EverQuest 2. EverQuest 2 being the sequel to what was then the most popular MMO. Two extremely different visual approaches. EverQuest 2 going after fidelity, making mm-hmm. things, you know, impressively photorealistic, etc. But couldn't run on anything really. It was, you know, just you had to have a very good machine to play this in anything approaching a satisfying manner, either smoothness or fidelity. Right. Mm-hmm. And that limited the audience. World of Warcraft, lower fidelity, could run on more stuff, leaned on art direction really, really well. And became the most popular thing in the world. There were other things that contributed to it, but like if you are cutting off a huge amount of your audience for technical reasons, you have to ask yourself what you're getting for doing that.
Yeah.
And that was the case for this, right? Like this is, you know, it became a meme, and it is in a way one of the most memorable things about this is the "Can it run Crysis" meme.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It is what I knew about it.
Yes.
You know, it's an object lesson. In game design, like art direction is always the right answer.
Yes.
Like almost always, if you care about like the history, if you are trying to make your game be impressive in context of the medium and in the history of the medium, art direction is always the answer.
Yeah.
Like 10 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. Weird parallel to that. And this is a tangent, but that I think about with that is The State, the TV show, the sketch comedy show, The State.
Uh-huh.
Alumni from that went on and made two Comedy Central shows. There's Stella, and then there's Reno 911. And an interesting thing that I read in an interview with Thomas Lennon of Reno 911 is that they were both equally successful in terms of ratings and such early uh-huh. on. Stella didn't get repicked up because it was expensive.
They shot it like a film. It's a gorgeous show.
It's a gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous show. And it's really funny. Like it is funnier than Reno 911. I like Reno 911. Stella is a better show. But it was just so expensive. You know, they made it look really, really good as opposed to being kind of efficient and going for, you know, for people who don't know, Reno 911 is basically a cops parody. It's the cheapest thing there is, you know, there is a thing in choosing a style like an, or like that feels like a parallel to me.
Yes.
Like that's a World of Warcraft and Stella was EverQuest.
Right.
In this scenario, this, what we got here is a real case of Stella.
We got a Stella on our hands.
We got a Stella on our hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, there are other things like they couldn't have known when they were making this, that processors wouldn't develop in the way they expected them to.
They banked on them going a certain way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they didn't like multiple cores became the word of the day, as opposed to just faster and better.
Yeah, as opposed to one really, really big, cool core, you know, with multi-threading and, you know, trade-offs.
Yep.
You know, just everything's trade-offs.
It's a Betamax. Yeah. So they didn't know. So it meant, you know, it was incredibly hard to run at the time. It runs a little bit weird now, if you put it on a modern computer. This is the regular version, not the remastered version.
Yeah. And the remastered version is fine. Everything is fine.
That's probably the game just as just the game. It's the thing we're looking at. Yeah. The if you put a nano suit controlled gun to my head, I couldn't tell you what any of the music in this.
Oh god.
I couldn't hum it. I couldn't even really describe it. I don't know that there's a more generic musical score in a game. it's incredible.
It was baffling, you know, going back to going to TV Tropes just to scan and refresh my memory about stuff and seeing like the awesome music and then a big list of YouTube links to tracks. It's like,
wow. This is going to be a fun little chunk of recording for music, because I think Ender Lilies has my least favorite song that's ever been in a video game.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to talking about that.
That's quite a bit. Is it a song that pops up very often?
It's the song in like the first opening Undead Burg part that is like a piano waltz that sounds like a baby singing it.
Yeah, that's really
beautiful. And they chose that for their beginning. Like, this is our first track. I fucking, that baby voice singing shit. I cannot.
Nope.
I fucking can't. And it sucks because the music in that game gets good later. But that first track, I don't think there's anything worse. This is arguably worse because you can't remember it at all. You know, but it doesn't make me mute it.
Right.
Which I did for baby mode. Moe baby mode.
Ooh. Screw you, TikTok.
The story and dialogue of this are very funny to me because they are so garbage. It's really quaint.
It is so, man. Yeah. Quaint's probably the right word for it. It's real.
That's the generous word. I'm not trying to gild any lilies. Quaint, if you feel like being charmed by, this, you know, Alpha Squad dumb shit.
Yeah. Just how many different ways can they find to say, I wish I had one of those suits.
Yeah. Get in the suit. The suit will take care of it. Can it, Jerusalem? We're doing this. All right, prophet, let's go.
Or even again, this is not a story that I respect enough to avoid spoiling. It's even just like, no, we can't nuke the alien. They absorb power.
That's incredible. They're like, I'm going to nuke them anyway.
Do you disagree with the president? Well, 50% of people do.
Yeah. Like, and in 2007 also,
yeah,
you know, also didn't have that many legs to be like, the president tells us what to do and we love him for it. it's real silly. All of the words in this. You also, a weird little thread in this is you, bouncing from authority dad to authority dad in this. Like, you just keep trading commanding officers and your guy is so blank that you're constantly like, yes sir, I can do it, sir. Like, I don't know if it's 2023 eyes, but I had a real like, someone's getting off on this. Like, just bouncing from military commander, like hard as nails military commander, telling you what to do over and over and over. There's a revolving door of them. It's like when I watch the Epicurious Four Levels of Cooking and then they show the level 4 chef and she pulls out the pointer and slaps the board. And I'm like, man, somebody is just absolutely cranking it so right to this level four chef correcting their grilled cheese.
Soldier, this hog will not fluff itself.
Yeah. Yes, sir, I can complete the mission. It's really, really, there's something there. The attempts at creating side characters in this are so funny. Like Psycho is the star of the DLC, like the story, the
expansion. Yeah.
The expansion, you get to spend the entire time with Psycho. And apparently, reading about it and watching the Noah Gervais video about the whole series, they give him a lot of character and they make every cutscene like he's going to torture a guy. So we're going to have him walk slowly to him for a full minute. You know, it's all that kind of shit. Just absolutely laughable garbage.
I laughed out loud. You know, they introduce, you know, first thing you see, you've got your squad, it's the four of you and your leader, right? And when half the squad is dead or gone by the second chapter, it's just you and Psycho.
You and Psycho, and then Prophet comes back, which I'm very surprised by. And this game fucking loves Prophet.
Ooh, yeah, the series loves Prophet.
The whole series loves Prophet. Eventually, you turn. Did you in the second one? You're another guy. Mm-hmm. You're Alcatraz, and then the suit slowly turns you into Prophet.
Yeah, Prophet uploaded himself. Yeah,
Prophet uploaded himself, and then downloads himself from the suit into your body.
Yeah,
and I promise you, it's not like you could do all kinds of stuff with identities and bodies and stuff based on this. It doesn't.
No,
it certainly does not. It is not, this is snaking a point from that Noah Gervais video, but I don't mind stealing from the best. He said that the protagonist of the series is the suit.
Uh-huh.
And like, that's basically true. Everything else that's a character is, nonsense.
Yeah.
Is a side concern. It's you, the player in the suit.
And the suit in the game, I mean, like, this is only explored in 2 and 3, but the suits are like, symbiotic is the wrong word. They devour you as you use it. Like, yes. If you put one of these on, you are bound to die. Yes. And so just the idea that the suit literally consumes identity is fucking amazing. You could do cool stuff with it, but no, it's not playing at that level. It just thinks a cool suit's cool.
A way smarter game would make this a meta commentary on games.
Uh-huh.
You know, the idea that the suit consumes identity, like the actual verbs you get as a player consume the player and constrain what you do. Like, you could do something neat with this.
Yeah.
And there, somebody could write a really intolerable essay about it with like lots of big reaches. I promise you, none of that stuff is actually present in the game.
No. It's no. Yeah. But by the end of Crisis 2, you are a corpse in the suit. Yep. And that's then, just the way it goes. Isn't it cool that the fight still goes on even though your body's dead?
The and then the in Crisis 3, you go for the alpha self. Which they keep talking about. And again, this was spoiled for me by that video. The Alpha Seth is a gigantic worm with a drill for a head. That's the end boss.
Badass.
Just absolutely. Come on.
I revised it. This actually rules. Dude's Rock.
It is. It's so close to Dude's Rock.
Yeah.
Like when you're on the helicopter with Psycho Squad and shit, I'm kind of like, all right, man, you know, like let's roll around in some shit. Like I can handle this garbage.
I am not too good for this.
Yeah. I was having kind of a good moment, like the Doom movie, you know? And then, it just fell off.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I don't know about you. I couldn't really find a lot of details about this. Everything that you read about, it's kind of like people describing the specs on a classic car.
Yeah. There's a lot of name pollution, in this, basically just talking about the meme part of it.
Yeah.
So this Crytek, they started this, they needed a new project for a CryEngine after they shipped Far Cry, for Ubisoft in 2004. They updated to the Crytek 2 engine to take advantage of these new technologies for Windows Vista and set out making these numbers bigger and making this even, you know, push things even further.
Yes. Early versions of this game featured the Chinese PLA as the enemy force instead of North Korea. Which yep. that's a swap that has been made a couple of times, like even in that same era.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, was it Homeland? I think Homefront. There we go.
Yeah.
That was originally supposed to be like, what if Red Dawn, but with China, and they swapped it out for Korea just because, you know, pariah state versus we might want to sell this game there.
Yes.
Kind of things. Yeah. That's entirely.
This wasn't
going to
sell tons of copies in North Korea.
Probably not. They have a lot of problems.
Yeah, they got that going on.
Yeah. The other thing, and I'm very happy that they changed this, you're going to return to the USS Constitution, where the last level takes place, between missions to do like a hub kind of thing, for between. Yeah.
What's interesting is they use all of that material. So on the chapter, you do go through the USS Constitution and walk around. There's tons of detail and interstitial little conversations that have been missing throughout the entire game. Like, it ends up feeling a really weirdly grafted on part.
Well, it makes it feel like you're starting the second half of a bigger product, and then the game ends.
That's exactly it. You do a big boss fight on the bridge, and that's it. And then you're like, let's go, lock and load, credits. This was not going to be the case. There's going to be a much more robust kind of third act to this that got cut down.
Yeah.
Possibly put in Crisis Warhead, which was the expansion released in 2008, you get to see the events of the game from Psycho's perspective. So finally, a game that explores the Psycho perspective. It's telling you how he grabbed an alien to study it.
Yes.
He shows up with it, and they're like, man, that must have been hard, Psycho. And he's like, Semper Fi. And then you study the alien and make the bad decision to nuke. If you ever wondered how that alien got on the ship, there's a whole DLC to tell you.
Yeah. I just the amount of just marriages that ended, jobs lost, just pure life force spent because people could not sleep, not knowing the answer of how that alien got on that ship.
God, I need to know how Psycho pulled it off. You crazy son of a bitch. You did it again.
Oh, man. So this game reviewed well as a showpiece for high-end PCs, but it didn't sell well because it was a showpiece for high-end PCs.
Yep. Nobody could play it.
Nope.
It's not a great business model.
And that was the case for like the entire series. Like Crytek has said, yeah, Crysis barely broke even for us, just generally across all three of them.
Yep. They made a stripped down console version to digital distribution that came out. And then eventually they would change kind of tacks with Crysis 2, which were designed simultaneously for release on console to expand the audience, which also feels a little bit like it gets rid of the unique selling point of this. Which is weird. They remastered the trilogy, released them for modern systems between 2020 and 2021. So you can play these pretty easily. Don't recommend it, but you can.
Yep.
If you want to. And they're making a Crysis 4.
Right.
Yeah. I guess if you are the most hard up for an FPS you haven't played from this era, play Singularity. And if you're really still like hard up,
play Rage.
Play Rage. And if you're extremely hard up after that, maybe play Metro. And then give Half-Life 2 a shot again, and then maybe play Crysis. I don't know. You could do a lot better.
Throw a time shift on there. I've not played that, but it seems interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like it's probably a little... Throw Project Snowblind.
Yeah.
Play Project Snowblind. Nobody talks about that game. I'll throw that on as a vanity pick, and we'll be in this exact same situation here pretty soon. Like a year from now, mark my word, it's March 2024.
Yeah.
Project Snowblind, baby. A game I have a weird little affection for.
Yeah, just it's a real cool concept. I always get that mixed up with Cold Fear.
Yeah, very different. I always get mixed up with 13 because they came out around the same time.
13 is very different. Yeah,
13 is super different. And has one of the worst, like the remaster of that everyone hated.
Oh yeah. Yeah. because it's a 2001 shooter.
Like, yeah, it wasn't very good in the first place.
Yeah,
like you dummies. It's sometimes design trends are good to be gone.
Yes.
You know, is the lesson here. Don't chase graphics, and design trends move for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be it for this generalities portion of the episode. But if you want to hear us describe Psycho and the crew, you can do so by joining us at patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
Mm-hmm. You don't just get this episode, the whole version of it. You get the full versions of every previous premium Watch Out for Fireballs, in addition to all of the premium Bonfireside chats, Unfilmable, the premium Abject Sufferings. There's a lot at that $5 tier.
Yeah. And then there's even more at the $10 tier. Mm-hmm. We like to provide a lot of value for that, and it's okay to dip in and out. We understand. We just really appreciate it. It helps us do what we're doing.
Yes.
And actually not helps, enables. We wouldn't be able to do this.
Oh God.
It was very difficult before when we were doing this, and would not be able to do as much stuff.
Nope.
So, this is how we keep our houses hot.
and these shows are our corn. It is too late to write in about Crysis or any of the games from March here. However, there is time to write in for April's games. Go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in by April the 15th if you have anything to say about Ender Lilies, Quietus of the Nights, The Sexy Brutale, or The Quarry, which is our premium episode for that month. Go ahead and write them in. And if you have thoughts about many of those games, separate them into multiple responses, please.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. This is going to come out where you barely have enough time to make it to Midwest Gaming Classic.
Mm-hmm.
That is the end of this month. That's going to be March 29th through April 2nd in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So if you're in the Midwest, come say hi.
Please do. We're going to have a table. We're going to be doing a live episode and hanging around.
Yeah. Do some kind of meetup thing. I got to look into that. That's on my task mask for today. But just some kind of gathering. We're coming out of our shells and we're doing just fine. Got a taste in our mouth. Baba da boop. So we just want to get our feet wet with public appearances again.
Yep.
Before really hitting the ground running. We are doing a panel, as we mentioned. We're going to have Bob Mackey from Retronauts join us, and we are talking about what makes a 7 out of 10 game, what makes a 7 out of 10 game good. Mm-hmm. Talking about some of our favorites and hopefully talking about some of your favorites.
Yeah, come prepared.
Yeah, bring a list. Do your homework. And I think that is about it.
I think so.
Yeah. Until next time, take care. Oh, wait.
Whoop. Oh, also, thanks, Gwen.
A big thanks to Gwen. Thank you, Gwen.